From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. We're entrepreneurs helping entrepreneurs by sharing stories of winning. And those stories, often they're inspirational, they're educational, and hopefully they connect us to the idea of what entrepreneurship can be. And I say on the show time and time and again that entrepreneurs solve the world's biggest problems. And today on the show, we have a really interesting opportunity to meet Mark Dorfer. He's the COO of PEMmotion USA. And we're going to be talking about how we might realize the future of mobility. And what I mean by mobility is automobiles, transportation. What is the future of the way that we are going to get around and move people and things from one place to another? And what you may not know is this part of our economy, this part of our science is changing very, very rapidly. And what you also may not know is that Sacramento has become, has put its flag in the ground and said, we are going to do it here in Sacramento. We are going to make these discoveries here in Sacramento at a place called the Mobility Center, the CMC, the California Mobility Center. And that is where PEMmotion is located. They transferred here to set up this office from Germany. And so Mark Dorfer is going to share what they're doing in discovering what mobility can be for us here in the U.S. and across the world. So I think you're going to learn a little bit. You're going to be inspired. And at the end of the show, I'm going to talk a little bit about the entrepreneurial revolution, because I think PEMmotion is the perfect example of the movement that is taking place right here in Sacramento. It's happening right before our very eyes. So stick around. Hear the story of Mark Dorfer, what he is doing at the Mobility Center, and get ready to learn something and be inspired about what we are creating right here in America, right here in the hometown we love.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Excited about today? We are here with Mark Dorfer. He is the COO of PEMmotion USA. They are a German, I think you guys are based out of Germany, aren't you? If you hear Mark speak, when you hear Mark speak, you may detect a slight accent. And so I want to dive into that a little bit. Just first of all, welcome to the show. Thank you. Your name D-O-R-F-E-R? You've got those little two little dots on the top of the O. The heck is that?
That's an umlaut.
What is it?
That's an umlaut.
So umlaut.
It makes the O sound like an Ö.
I never knew that, because I've seen your name spelled D-O-E-R.
That's the translation for an American keyboard.
I didn't know that.
The O with the umlaut, so the O with the two dots becomes an O-E.
Okay.
So yeah, my California driver's license, I have D-O-E then. So it's
D-O-E, okay.
But it would be Dorfer instead of Dorfer.
So okay, interesting. I never had heard that before, so I saw that as you were coming on the show, and I'm like, I got to get to the bottom of this. Yeah. I need to learn the nuances of the, how Germany contrasts from the USA. But I want to find out about your business and what got you out here, because you guys are out in the heart of the, probably the most innovative thing that's happening in the region right now at the Mobility Center,
right.
And you are a fixture out there. So maybe talk to me about this decision to come to Sacramento, locate here, and the enormous impact this is destined to have.
Right. I mean, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. We just talked about this a year ago or something like that. We finally made it. after like some COVID interruptions, etc.
Yes.
And actually are coming to Sacramento had a bit of a COVID delay too, right? Because conversations actually started back in 2018, where we had more and more business from California or from the US in general, but specifically from California, from this innovation space, especially looking at mobility, clean technologies. We had more and more clients come to what we've done or to come see what we've done back in Germany, creating a full innovation ecosystem. So providing academic research, matching that with industry projects, getting direct feedback from industry into research. So where does industry want to go? Where can research maybe support that? But then vice versa, what actually works in industry, what the researchers are doing. So setting up that ecosystem, then adding, we like to call it infrastructure as a service. So physical infrastructure for spaces where you can actually build a small prototype, but all the way through to like small series production, ramp up simulation. So you can develop your product, but also processes. We then added our own venture capital fund back in Germany to augment that ecosystem, to really drive specifically hardware innovation, because I mean, it's easier in software. I'm very black and white here, but basically you need a garage, a box of Red Bull, pizza, a computer, you go kind of thing.
You need more space.
Hard tech is different. Like hard tech is hard. Like it's very different. So you need a lot more components to go along with it to de-risk the whole operation. So we set that up, and PEMmotion then kind of like is the hawk eye over everything, kind of the consultancy that goes along. We have business and engineering consulting services, so we can support on all these things. But in the end, we're the focal point of the ecosystem. And yeah, as I mentioned, we had more and more clients from the US come over to experience that. And at one point then GSEC approached us and said, hey, wouldn't that be a good idea for Sacramento in the region? So I think it was Smut then put down the first dollars on the table, said, hey, PEMmotion, we want you guys to go through a diligence phase, set up a feasibility study. How could this model look for our region? Because it's not copy paste. You can't just take it from Germany and put it over here. But there are like lessons learned we've had. And so we set up a feasibility study back then. The result of that was the CMC, the California Mobility Center, which is now really taking off actually as we speak. I'm going to be big announcements next week at the ITS, the Intelligent Transportation Systems World Congress in LA next week. So we're going to have some big announcements there. Can't say more at this point.
So this ecosystem that you already built in Germany. What's the size? Can you give me a sense of what the size of PEMmotion is in Germany? What's that ecosystem?
Well,
you know,
how robust is it? There's a difference between PEMmotion and the ecosystem. So PEMmotion, anybody who's actually got PEMmotion on their business card, that's, I think, 80 people worldwide right now. So we have
80
like
people. Okay.
Germany, we have the US, we have two offices, Mexico and one in Canada, right? So,
okay.
But the ecosystem is probably like 400.
400 in Germany.
No, that's globally. So
that's
with
okay.
all the partners. But like what we like to do is kind of like with each of those partners that can like close a gap on your innovation journey, we have a service level agreement, or we can pull them in really fast. So we can be broad in what we serve.
So this is actually part of a global ecosystem.
Well, I mean, where we're at right now is really, so we've started establishing these localized efforts like in Germany, in California, we've got one in Windsor, Essex, just across the border of Detroit, in Mexico. So now we're starting to connect all those ecosystems, building one global ecosystem. That's really our mission in the end, to kind of have this all the way from zero to 100. You just like wherever you need something on your innovation journey, we can provide it through our ecosystem. It might be PEMmotion at one point, yeah, but it might just be one of our partners. And it's really about helping each other out. Because I believe that, I don't know, the challenges we're facing right now in any kind of innovative space and sustainability and trying to save our planet, quite frankly, there's not one stop that's going to solve that. It's always going to be a collaborative or cooperative attempt.
So we're talking about solving the problems of transportation, transporting people and goods from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And basically the innovative effort that needs to go into cars and other things, trucks, other things that move stuff.
And it actually takes it one step further.
Okay.
It's concepts too, because I mean, in the end, if we look at our cities right now, like replace every internal combustion engine with an electric engine, you still have all those cars in the city. Still a ton of combustion. I mean, there's so much more that goes into pollution out of transportation, right? I mean, there's like the powders that go off your tires. Brakes produce pollution to the ecosystem or the environment, right? Just all the asphalt that goes down for streets, parking, etc. Like it's taking away from our planet, basically. Okay. So there's more behind it. The idea is to really create a holistic approach to creating a more sustainable future.
Okay, so the purpose is not just to build cool stuff. It's mainly for our planet and for the
cool stuff
ecology.
Is the enabler, right?
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, similar to purpose of a company probably shouldn't be to make money, but you need to make money to get to your purpose, right? So
okay.
Similar approach here is like pioneering a more sustainable future, and cool stuff, especially in the mobility and transportation space, is an enabler to get there. And for us, we really try to support anybody, if it's an individual or a company or an ecosystem, to get to that next level and accelerate that process.
Well, let's talk about the CMC, the California Mobility Center, just for a second, so people can get a visual for what is in the process of being built, because it's a newer effort, but as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's a game changer, a potential game changer for Sacramento's economy over the long haul, because so much innovation could be spawned right here out of our hometown and then go global from there. So when I picture this, it's at Sac State. It's a partnership with SMUD. What does it look like if I show up there?
Well, if you show up there, it's an office space and there's a ramp up factory, we call it. Currently it's out in Depot Park, 25,000 square foot facility. But that's a localized effort, right?
Okay.
So that's the Sacramento localized effort. CMC is more, it's a collaborative. Yeah, it's an innovation collaborative. We have members and clients from all over the states, Canada, even Europe, Mexico. Like, so it's already become a global thing, where the ramp up factory in Sacramento is a localized effort. And then what I'm talking about, the ramp up factory, is a similar approach as we took in Germany, kind of having that infrastructure as a service, giving that space to companies that want to either like build some prototypes, test new technology, test production processes, test different business models, and also find a space to collaborate. So because I think there are so many new business models out there when looking at creating a new or more sustainable future that augment each other, but there needs to be a space to bring them together. So like what you are doing here with the Gross Factory and the CMC, like that, they should all be like complementary to each other. I don't think that the CMC is trying to compete with any of that. It's more about like closing the gaps, filling the gaps, so that there's like a full on like suite of experiences. And I think that's where Sacramento then can really benefit from. But yeah, you just mentioned the partnership. So it's SMUD, it's Sac State, it's UC Davis, it's GSEC, that kind of like really started it all at the beginning as founding partners, but we're up to, I don't know, I mean, I think 45 members, and you have anything from utilities, tier one suppliers, OEMs, they're all in their startups, right? So it's also about creating those deployment opportunities. So imagine you have a new product, you want to bring it to the market, your startup. I mean, the most important thing is somebody to find somebody to take on your first commercial products, right? Bring them to the road, field test them, give you feedback. And we're creating those actively creating those opportunities. I think that's a part, actively creating those opportunities for both industry incumbents to have a look at, okay, what's out there? What kind of solutions can I implement into my portfolio, into my service system? But then for the new product developers, is kind of like, okay, where's a partner that might be interested in my product, who's interested in working with me? So you probably saw the big announcement at the 1 year anniversary event in March, where so Zeus Electric Chassis, like SMUD, took on buying their first 5 commercial vehicles. So they actually, like, that's a win-win situation for SMUD and for Zeus and the CMC. And again, there's so many case studies that are going to be coming out of that, where we can learn from on how to create that environment.
Yeah, I got to tip my hat to SMUD and the leadership at SMUD for
absolutely
thinking innovatively. I mean, they're a utility, but they're geared toward helping the rest of the community solve these big challenges. And so they adopt things like cutting edge technology and put it into their system to help us startups sort of vet it out a little bit. And I think in the process, it makes them a more innovative entity. So it ends up becoming a win-win, but I have to tip my hat to them. They are outstanding in that realm. And I think Sacramento is lucky to have that kind of leadership running what to most people might look at and go, ah, it's just a government agency. It's not really, it's ran more innovatively than the government. And so it's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, quite honestly, like the first time SMUD approaches, I was like, oh, that's this utility from the state, from like, just another utility. They're not. They're really not like, and over the last 3 to 4 years now working with SMUD and the CMC, I've just really like, this is something I haven't experienced before. Like I know utility, we've worked with various utilities on like specific projects here or there, concepts for their like kind of e-mobility transition or specific projects in like the charging infrastructure, but like this full-on approach of committing to the community, committing to the future, and actually putting some skin in the game in there right away from the beginning and say, hey, I'm putting this down. I want people to follow, but I'm going to lead by example. I mean, that's just, that's
powerful.
Well,
I mean, I think because of SMUD and you and GSEC and some of the other people that are putting some skin in the game, putting their money where their town is, that is going to help keep us from becoming Detroit, Michigan, that was over-reliant on one sector of the economy. It happens to be mobility in some level. But, you know, they get over-reliant on something and then stuff happens. It changes in the, you know, in the economy or in technology. And next thing you know, the town dies. And Sacramento, I think, has got a lot of seeds being planted that really are going to end up flourishing and being huge. And you guys are a big part of that. And I think it's important for our community, not just the entrepreneurial community, the Sacramento regional community and the world to know what's happening in Sacramento, because it really is game changing for the future of mobility. Okay, so let's talk about that, because to me, that's the cool stuff. I love, you know, saving the environment, protecting the environment, but like what kind of cool technology is on the horizon that maybe people wouldn't imagine yet?
Wouldn't imagine yet. I think
if we think of like flying cars,
well, there are flying cars out there. Yeah. Like there's I don't want to say
that's not practical yet.
That's not practical yet, and I think it's going to take quite a while until like regulatory authorities and the technology kind of catch up to that point where it's really like commercially viable. Okay. It's possible. It's possible now. Like there are tons of prototypes out there flying around, but to actually deploy them in cities, it's a big thing. And then also, I think the innovation of where we're actually going is more in how you like augment your core business model with other business models. Because let's look at flying cars or air taxis or whatever you want to call them. Due to the crazy demands that go into, like, for example, the batteries now, because we're talking about flying cars that are still going to be battery driven now.
It's not going to be gas powered.
Right. So the crazy demands that go into the battery, what does that mean actually? So a battery that will go into a air taxi now, it's probably going to cost you 6 to 8 times what a battery costs that goes into your EV. At the same time, like an EV battery is, I don't know, probably 8 to 10 years it'll stay in your car and then you'll have to replace it. Like we've talked to different clients now, they're estimating between 6 to 9, maybe 12 months of lifetime that the battery has in their vehicle, so in their air taxi. So you have eightfold of cost with like a tenth of the lifetime in your product. So suddenly you've got a huge, huge capex that goes with your product. Yeah. So you need to find business models that go around that. So what are you going to do with this battery when it comes out of the air taxi, right? And it's still a high performance battery, but because of the regulations and the needs an air taxi has, so very, very high drive at the beginning to get you off the ground, then a long time of idling, and then like high drive again or high pull again at the end. That's a very specific performance profile right there, right?
So how fast, you know, I was using the air taxi as more as a, you know, I don't know if that's 50 or 100 years from now, but let's just put it out there way in the future. But let's talk about batteries for a second. They're improving like super rapidly right now, right? This is a, I don't know if it's like Moore's Law or whatever, but like they're improving really quickly. I don't know how fast they are improving, but I know they're getting smaller, cheaper, faster, or
Batteries
less
probably
expensive.
like we're gonna hit a wall when we look at the raw material availability, right?
Okay.
And where we get the raw material from, because there's a huge dilemma out there now. Okay, there are certain, like, just look at lithium mining, etc. Mm-hmm. So there are like the untapped resources right now are in countries or in regions where then are, let's call it Western world, so the US and then the EU, they're not really willing to work with these companies or government-owned mines, right? So at the moment, the only entities out there that have contracts are Chinese. So are we going to, like, where's that going to head? Like, from a regulatory, like, it's a huge geopolitical problem right now, actually getting those raw materials in place for the supply chain. And because they are the beginning of the supply chain, it has an immense effect on the full supply chain. So I think that we're going to see, you asked about cutting edge technologies, and I'm not a battery expert, right? So I love the industry, but I'm not a battery expert. But you're going to see so much, and it's going to probably be 10, 20, 25 years even though the development is fast. But they're going to be very, very different approaches to batteries. Batteries are not going to be the same as they are right now. Right now, we're doing development to get them into EVs as fast as possible, to drive deployment, to drive awareness, to drive acceptance. But it's not really, like, I think the technology right now is not the one that's going to survive.
Okay.
Yeah, so
yeah,
I think you're going to see a lot of different materials. We're going to see, I mean, we're looking at solid state batteries coming, depending on which study you read, 2025, 2027, commercially available, we'll see. That's already going to be the next game changer, but I think that's really, like, we're in an infant state with batteries at the moment.
So who's most excited? Okay, so you have all these startups and these innovators that are building these cool technologies, and we all know the classic story of Blockbuster and Hollywood, Blockbuster and Netflix, mm-hmm. where the video stores, went out of business because the new business model killed it. Started off with DVDs, and then it went to streaming and so on. And I happened to own a bunch of video stores back in the day, and we always knew that it was coming. But we were like, hey, you know what? It takes too much bandwidth to get to do this. It's going to take forever. You know, it's like way out there. Next thing you know, it happens. So I'm kind of curious. And so Blockbuster went away, the small independents went away, and obviously, Netflix jumped in, and now they're Prime, and everybody's doing streaming video.
But Netflix struggling right now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like it's everything.
It's already, the next step's
there's
already
this
there.
Evolution,
yeah.
And innovation. Just, I mean, it's changing faster and faster these days. So I'm kind of curious: are the bigger car companies, the bigger people in mobility, are they changing at the most rapid pace enough, or is it more like these innovators, they're springing up and they're becoming real players? Yep. Right before like Netflix did.
Well you see both, right? Yeah. So you see complete disruption of the supply chain, and I was just at the BMW supplier conference 2 weeks ago, and just the increase of suppliers that are there now already shows you that they don't actually have as much power over the suppliers anymore, because there are so many disruptors in the market. It's not like I'm going to get my parts from this group and I can put all the pressure on them, because it's going to be, okay, these guys are now also starting to integrate. So they're moving from being a tier one supplier to tier 0.5, whatever. So they're going further along the supply chain. Anybody kind of like with this new market, anybody has a chance to position himself or themselves, mm-hmm. whatever it is in the end. So that's actually a really interesting aspect. And also you see that the big players that want to move fast are the ones that actually are picking up from that new market and are actually not doing as much R&D in-house anymore. If you look at R&D budgets percentage-wise, like compared to then what they are spending on acquisitions and mm-hmm. et cetera, that has changed completely. And that's changing the market. That's changing how people think about it, which is, I believe it's a really good thing, because it spurs on those innovators. It spurs on those new ideas, because the chances are there. The chances are way bigger than they were like 20 years ago, where it was okay, the big OEMs, they all have their supply chain set up. And if you manage to get in there, you start as a tier 5, and then you have to bleed to go all the way to a tier 1 supplier. That has changed. Like, I'm not saying anybody can jump into a tier one supplier position right away, because it just requires a lot more than just a cool technology. But the chances, the opportunities to maybe start at a tier two level or even become your own OEM are just just immensely, they've changed. The whole game has changed. And again, I think we're at the very beginning, right? Yeah. And you see that with like the alliances that have started to form over the last 3 to 5 years that the car makers are not even sure where to go and like cooperate way more on like developing or jointly developing new platforms, etc., because they said, okay, if we don't speed up our process, like other players are going to take over.
Yeah. So, and I have to assume, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, that most of the dollars spent in innovating in this mobility realm is in the cars and trucks and stuff that's on the road. Is that fair? Is that like where the money is going? Or is there mobility outside of what we think of as being on the road that you guys have a focus on?
Well, a lot of, like it's on and off highway, to be honest. Like, I mean, look at all the off highway applications. Look at California. I mean, there's a huge part of it's ag tech, right? So,
okay,
agricultural applications. But look at mining, right? Look at like Australia now facing like having to redo all their mining structures because like okay, we now have this opportunity to move to zero emission, and again, it changes your whole business model, like. Not having any, like not having to construct mines to get rid of fumes because you're going in with a electric vehicle now. So that again opens a lot of process along and innovation along the road because you don't have to think in those old paradigms anymore, right? You can change your thinking completely, right? So if you don't need, like it changes the height a mine needs because you can use lower vehicles because you don't need that airflow space anymore to transport fumes out, for example, right? So it's you're right. The most money is going in what we still like. When I give you the word mobility, automobility, the first thing that come to your mind are still the ones that are benefiting most from that money that is going into the market. But I think there is way more behind it, and it's also like you have to look at concepts and. Around just changing how mobility is thought. You look at Barcelona that have introduced super blocks. So they have closed down blocks in the city where just no cars or vehicles are allowed.
Oh.
And at the beginning, everybody's like, oh, that's not going to work. It's going to cause congestion somewhere else. And like the people are going to be mad that they can't park their car in front of their house anymore and stuff. They love it. They are introducing more and more super blocks as you go. There are more and more districts in Barcelona where you're not allowed to use a car. They're giving back that space to the community, to the people. They're opening cafes. It's helping the economy,
right? Yeah, let me
imagine
this. So I drive and park near the super block, and then from there, I'm on foot.
You're on foot. Or you have, like, they have free transportation in, like, small, like, three-wheel electric cargo bikes or whatever. Like, you go to Ljubljana, the capital of Slovenia. The complete inner city is car-free. And they've done that for over a decade now, I think. But with everything you I think if you stay in a hotel you pay $2 like city tax or something and all your transportation is included in that, so it's free for everybody. That's and they awesome. Love it. I've been there. It's great. It's so much fun, like actually having car free cities. So if you think about mobility, maybe it's not just automobility. It's actually it sounds weird, but one of the craziest innovations is just walking again, maybe.
Yeah, what a concept. Hey, get a little exercise, some fresh air.
Yeah. Jeez. So I mean that's what I meant really early on about like talking about more holistic approach, right? Uh-huh. It's yes, there is a huge potential to gain from reducing emissions from our current emission drivers, but there's a lot more potential actually to gain by rethinking mobility as a whole, right?
Interesting. So I have to ask you about self-driving cars because I think a lot of people think, like, what's the most innovative thing happening in our cars, right? We, you know, is it Sirius XM radio? Is it, you know, going from stick shift to power to, you know, automatic? You know, some of that stuff is like not game changing, but self-driving cars, this stuff is starting to happen. You can see it's what's happening with, you know, a lot of the major players like Tesla. These cars almost drive themselves these days. What do you think the future of that is? What's on the horizon?
I think that the sky is the limit here. I don't think that self-driving cars themselves are going to solve the problem. Again, they're one part of the puzzle, maybe. Because again, like, even if all the cars are self-driving, but you're sitting in your car by yourself in traffic, that didn't really change a lot. If now people say, okay, I can rethink how I see mobility, and a self-driving car is going to help me because, I don't know, I book it over an app, and in the morning I know 6:15 every morning is going to pick me up, and it's going to also pick up maybe three or four other people, and I can already, I don't know, start doing my work on my commute. That might change it. But again, it's coming back to the concept of rethinking mobility as a whole and rethinking car ownership, etc. But it's going to be like, we talk about like the cutting edge technology. How long is that going to take? How long is it actually going to take to change people's perception on mobility?
Yeah.
Just imagine not having your own car. Like, because people value that one time a year where they need to go more than 350 miles in one go, like over the EV that gives them 300 miles, right? And it's like, no, I'm still going to keep my ICE engine. So when are we actually going to move to, well, I'm fine with not actually having a car. Like, when's that going to happen?
Wait, that is a good question. Well, I guess, you know, like people in New York, you know, they take the subway or what have you. Around here, everybody's got to have, you know, most people want to have an extra car too.
Exactly,
you know, it's like, I have extras, I'm going to collect them. So that's kind of interesting. But what about the challenge associated with labor in terms of like truck drivers and people that need to drive these vehicles? I keep thinking that self-driving will end up being pressed hard because of the shortage of people that want to drive a truck and right. things like that.
That I mean, especially for like trucking in like overland hauling in the US, I think it makes a lot of sense, right? Look at like just going down a highway for the next, I don't know how many thousand miles, right? It makes a lot of sense, and I think that's where the main applications are going to come in for those self-driving vehicles. So it's very interesting there. Nevertheless, so what? Like, you're not going to take the human component out of it completely. You're still going to, but you're going to just need a different type of profile, maybe. Because let's say that self-driving truck is on the road and it's completely like humanless. It breaks down in the middle of nowhere. What are you going to do? So you need somebody on board now that maybe can do those kind of services. So the profile maybe changes from the traditional truck driver to somebody who's now more of a maintenance personnel or something like that on board. So it's just a shift in who is needed. I don't think that's going to get rid of the human part of it completely.
Interesting.
It's just, yeah. So I see like all these self-driving autonomy levels, they're going to increase security quite a bit. I mean, you already, like, most cars already like do a lot of the thinking for you or support you in your driving, etc. So I think that's really where we're going to be heading in the next 5 to 10 years. Completely autonomous. Yeah, again, it's possible. Do we actually need it in most applications? I don't think so. Is it interesting for specific use cases? For sure.
Okay.
Like, it's very use case based. But with everything in this new market, I love to say it's use case based. And I hate is a strong word, but I very much dislike these extremist groups and of anything. Like, you go into any of those conversations, any forum online, you have the, it's only battery electric, it's only fuel cell, it's only this, it's only that. I like, at this point where we are at in this industry, don't put your money on one horse. Like, just don't, because it's not going to work out. If we do go fully battery electric now, like, which grid is going to support that, right? If we go fully fuel cell, who's going to build all those, like, who's going to build that infrastructure? Like, who's going to pay for that? So it's going to be use case specific. It's going to be regional, right? You just mentioned New York versus, I don't know, rural California. even California, just thinking about being very forward thinking and being the innovation state and whatever. There's still spots in California where you just have very, very different circumstances compared to San Francisco, Sacramento, LA. Yeah, I mean, you go to Central Valley, completely different picture, right? Completely different needs. So it's very use case specific. And I think once we wrap our head around that and don't kind of close down to other solutions, say, hey, I'm going to develop a solution that works here, that works here, that works here, that augments this solution over here. That's really then where we, as a holistic approach again, where we all can benefit from.
So what, I'll try to make this my last question on the innovation piece. But what innovation is out there that you're most excited about, that are maybe what our audience might be most excited about and or surprised about, that's kind of like game changing? Is there anything out there that's like, hey, this is happening right here, and most people probably don't know about it?
That's a difficult question, actually, because
I'm not here to throw easy. This is not softball practice.
I didn't expect that, to be honest. So the question is really like, do we actually need something crazy groundbreaking? That's the actual question. Mm. And I just think we need a more unified effort behind changing where we're at right now. Like, just realizing that where we're at right now is not a good space. It's not a good place to be in. We need to change our mentality. We need to change the way regulators work with academic research, work with the industry. We need to change and we need to change our thinking in terms of how we communicate with each other, how we collaborate with each other to reach a common goal. And actually, maybe the most groundbreaking innovation that could be is everybody kind of...
That's it. That's the innovation. That's the power of working together.
The power of with. Like, if we can make that work, any technology that will help us get there, that would be crazy. Yeah.
But maybe some software system that gets us communicating with one each other so we trust each other.
Yeah.
God. I love that, by the way. We, the Growth Factory and Haney Biz, everything I've been working on for the last several years is with that philosophy.
Yeah.
And I love that you brought that. So... as we sort of, you know, I only have a few minutes left, but I'm really interested in the fact that you're from Germany. You chose California. PEM Motion chose California. The mobility center ended up here. To me, this is really interesting because I think we all know California is environmentally conscious, innovative in nature, mostly, you know, we're known more in the Bay Area and Silicon Valley, but Sacramento's on the horizon. It's coming. And then you think about Germany and mobility. I drive a Porsche, right? Germans are known for building great car. I also drive a Toyota truck, but yeah. Mostly. But I got a Porsche, and you know, and where we're located here on this street is Toy Row. I got Nilo Porsche right next door. I got Tesla on the other side of me here in Rockland. It's like, and now I got the mobility center, the cutting edge stuff happening in Sacramento, and it's coming heavily from Germany, but all around the world.
Yeah.
So why here, besides the fact that Barry Broom reached out and said, hey, we'll come on over?
Well, Barry's always a driving force here. It just makes a lot of sense. I mean, you just mentioned, actually, you just put all the ingredients out there. It has that innovative spirit, that innovative ecosystem actually already there. It's kind of like, it's smoldering there. It just needed a bit of wind to actually, I don't know, fire's a really bad
yeah, bad timing right on that one.
But it just needed something to ignite that fire, actually, because like California in general, but then Sacramento, and that ties back to what I was mentioning earlier, is it is the space where you can bring academic research, industry, and then the regulators together, because you can you can research as much as you want. You can have R&D centers as much as you want. If the regulators are not going to play along with your game, you're not going to get that technology onto the road, right? So or in the air or whatever it is. So you need those components to be together, and Sacramento is perfectly located for that. And from here, I think there will be an immense push to the rest of the country. So Detroit, the Southeast, in general, the Midwest, they're all going to get a push from here. They're going to have different focus areas. They're going to have different ways of being part of that. But they're gonna get a push from California, from Sacramento. We're close enough to the valley to feed off that technology innovation that's happening here. But really, like, take it to the next step of, okay, what does that mean in terms of changing the mobility space? A car still looks like a car. Your Porsche, if you have a 911, probably looks the same as it does 30 years ago.
Yeah,
which,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I love it. But we were just talking about, like, okay, how a city is going to evolve, how are self-driving cars going to change how we think about mobility, but how are they actually going to change the car, right? So I think Sacramento is really, like, in a great position with the universities here and the regulators being in place, and now the CMC, the California Mobility Center, being established is really rethinking the whole mobility aspect. Bringing together OEMs and the utilities, those were like two separate worlds two or three years ago, and now they need to work together in this new space, because the one will not survive without the other if they are following the same goal of creating a more sustainable future. So if you take all that together, I think Sacramento is really well positioned to do that.
I love it. Okay, so last question, and I want you to take as long as you need to answer. What did I not ask you that I should have asked you? Like, what did you expect to be sharing today? And like, just make sure you leave us with anything that you think is that I left off the table.
Well, we talked about mobility a ton now, but when we talk about like sustainability, I think the whole conversation has gone in that direction of sustainability equals like caring about our environment. And I'm not saying it shouldn't, but sustainability in all resources is kind of getting neglected a little bit in the conversation. And with that, I'm actually including our human resources, et cetera. We're talking about the change in thinking about mobility, but change about how our organization is going to be run in the future. What should what is the vision of a organization, of a company, right? We talked about money not actually being the purpose of the company, just an enabler. But what if all the companies kind of like shift towards creating a more sustainable future on all aspects for their employees, for the environment, and then using whatever they are creating as an enabler for that, rather than saying, I'm building a cool ass car, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, you see that in a lot of vision statements that are coming out at the moment, like Tesla also, like, it's more about changing the world, and we're going to do that by having this nice car. Mm-hmm. I mean, Patagonia was in the news now, mm-hmm. right? But it's never been their goal to create cool apparel or clothing. It was always to save the planet, and creating this kind of clothing and the messaging and everything is their means to get that done. So I think I'd like to see sustainability thought as a more holistic approach, more from more people, taking into account your full company, your organization itself. Like, my appeal to everybody out there is kind of get rid of a pyramid in your company. Like, get rid of those long ways of going, okay, somebody's noticed something, now he needs to go to his supervisor, to their manager, to the VP, senior VP, a CEO makes a decision, it takes all the way to trickle back. Give people autonomy in their decisions, that so that like in the end you come to a principle of subsidiaries where any decision can be made at the point where the decision actually comes up. That's going to be so powerful. Like, it's crazy. Like, we've started doing that with Pemotion. Internally, we don't really have any titles anymore. We have roles. We work in roles. Externally, yes, it says chief operating officer on my business card, because society still wants that from me. Internally, like, there's a acquisition circle we work in, there's a money circle, there's a risk circle, there's a business circle that's focused on homologation. And within those circles, I might just be a very, very small fish, right? I might get orders from somebody else, or there might be a different circle and we decide completely in consent, or there might be a different circle where we actually go to, if not everybody says yes, we're not going to go forth with that. So the way we are working, and it's in pilot phase.
This is a show in and of itself.
That's a show in and of, yeah, it absolutely is. And thinking about that, taking that into account, has been so powerful for us. The way our employees are engaging with the company and with what we're trying to do is incredible. Like, we've moved from being responsible for tasks to feeling actually responsible for the company and therefore for the company's vision. And maybe that's the last part here, but even visions, I've been a huge fan of like vision and mission workshops and making sure companies have a strong vision and a mission to support it. But maybe even vision should be changed to be like evolutionary purpose, because it just changes. And if you think about a vision being an evolutionary purpose and the vision drives your mission of the company, shouldn't your company be able to adapt fast, to be agile, to be like truly free floating? I mean, that's just a thought to put out there.
We may need to go out for a German beer and talk about that,
because
I love the I'm really intrigued by your innovative mind, and I think our audience definitely got something to think about today. Mark Dorfer, thank you for coming on the show.
Well,
thank you for coming to Sacramento.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. Mark Dorfer, super sharp dude, knows more than about mobility, knows about winning. And it's great to have people that know how to win who have relocated right here to Sacramento. So great hearing about PEM Motion and the way that mobility is changing, transportation is changing as we know it. And these kind of changes, they take time. They don't happen overnight. And I mentioned I was going to talk about the entrepreneurial revolution. And a revolution, a movement, it often shows up at the beginning and it looks a little bit more like an evolution, right? It happens so gradually. And I can tell you, as somebody who's been saying entrepreneurial revolution a thousand or two times over the last several years, that when you're down in it like I am, it feels like it happens slow. It happens so slowly. But in reality, looking back over the last several years, it has been happening. It happens very gradually. And so before it becomes a revolution, a real movement, it does feel a little bit like pushing a rock up a hill, and it's heavy lifting. And I'm not the only one attempting to move this rock. I have teammates. There are other people within the region that are pushing their own rocks. And now together, this group of people is beginning to work together and actually build what we call the backyard advantage, where we're working together with entrepreneurs at the heart of this movement. And I think when you finally realize that it's working, that the revolution is upon us, that it has been ignited, it's when you notice it happening without you, right? When people begin to work together interdependently instead of independently, working interdependently, working together, and it's like, wow, it is creating its own flywheel, its own energy system, its own ecosystem, its own weather storm is happening, and it really becomes a revolution. You're no longer needing to push yourself. You're helping push, but you're also able to step back and go, wow, it's happening right here in the hometown I love. It's happening with the Mobility Center. It's happening with investors beginning to put their money where their town is in bigger and bigger ways. We see that through the Growth Factory and the other venture capital in businesses here in the Sacramento region, the Sac Angels. All of this money is coming off the sidelines and being invested into very, very promising startups. You're seeing it with municipalities, cities like the city of Roseville, the city of Rockland, people like Sacramento State University and Sierra College and other higher educational institutions are coming together. You're seeing this with experts in and around the business arena saying, how do we work together? And I think when you see the revolution start to take shape, it's like it's almost miraculous when you remember the days of the beginning, right? When you're pushing this extremely heavy boulder and you can't even move it alone, so that you end up getting some help. And anyway, super gratifying to see that. And at the heart of this whole thing is people that are fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship. They're risking their sacrificing, they're putting the rest of their life on hold in many cases. And to see these entrepreneurs begin to flourish and succeed and become worth, you know, billions of dollars, it's super gratifying. So I love sharing the stories of startups, people who are making it happen, and people who have actually achieved it and really have created so much opportunity. And that success breeds further success. So for all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship, all of you who are out there helping change the world, and of course, all you out there fighting the good fight to keep our country safe, our streets safe, America safe, you know, here at the Growth Factory, on the Mark Haney Show, at Haney Biz, you know what? We're never above you. We're never below you. We're always by your side. This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.